Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. The obesity epidemic is top of the list of public health concerns these days. Kate Chaney is a clinical midwife consultant at the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney. Associate Professor Kirsten Black is Joint Head of the Discipline of Obstetrics, Gynaecology and Neonatology at the University of Sydney. Together with five other co-authors, they have conducted research into perinatal outcomes for nulliparous women associated with overweight and obesity. They are my special guests today.
Why did this research need doing?
So we were interested in the global data, which is showing that there is more and more obesity in the world. And also several papers have published the links between maternal obesity and a range of adverse outcomes. And we wanted to examine this trend in maternal obesity in the Australian population and also investigate what proportion of adverse outcomes, such as preterm birth, postpartum hemorrhage, caesarean section, could be attributed to this rising obesity.
Why did you decide to use PAS rather than another measure?
So the population attributable fraction is trying to assess the population impact of the change of BMI on adverse outcomes rather than looking at the change in the risk for individual women. And we focused on the PAF because this analysis quantifies the exposure of weight in our study on an outcome. So another way of looking at it is how much of a reduction, for example, prematurity would occur if the exposure could be decreased. Well, it's different than the relative risk, because the relative risk is the individual risk.
Yes.
This is a population risk.
So it's saying if you, in the paper we talk about this, that if women move down one obesity category, then it would make a huge impact on a range of adverse outcomes. Preeclampsia is the highest with respect to that. So, yes, it's looking at moving groups of people down a weight category and how that would impact.
So tell us about your participants and your methodology and what you were trying to measure exactly.
So this was we did a retrospective audit of medical notes, and we looked at what was recorded on the electronic medical record. Mm-hmm. So it was de-identified data. Over the 25-year period, and we then not all records had BMI recorded, so some we had to exclude some of the data because simply the data were not there.
Yeah.
But we decided to choose nulliparous women, so that is women presenting for their first pregnancy, and to look at that group of women in particular because it wouldn't be influenced by previous pregnancies, and look at what had happened over time to the weight, the BMI strictly, of that group of women.
So how has that BMI changed over time?
So just for example, 1990, 73% of women who started pregnancy with a healthy BMI, and by 2014, the 2010 to 2014 period, this has decreased to 68%. So there's been a sort of shift in overweight and obese classes. So if you compare the 1990 to 1994 group, 12.7% of women were overweight, and by 2010, 2014, that rose to 16.4%. And if you look at obese women, from 1990 to 1994, it was 4.8% of those first-time mothers were obese. And in 2010-2014 period, that percentage had risen to 7.3% of first-time mothers in the obese BMI category.
Did those numbers surprise you, Kate?
They did a little bit. I mean, I guess as a clinician, I see that, and part of my job is seeing women who have early pregnancy loss. So I'd been able to talk to women about weight and being healthy preconceptually in a following pregnancy, but I didn't, I hadn't expected those numbers, and I have to say it was, wasn't very satisfying.
Kirsten, what about you? Did they surprise you?
I think the trends themselves weren't surprising. I think looking, when we decided to look at the population attributable fraction, that was very, very interesting, and I think not really well understood in the community of what the impacts are, not only for women of, you know, being overweight and obesity for their own health, but the impacts on the baby and actually, and then the child's long-term health. So there's a number of, you know, big picture kind of implications that I don't think had come out. I haven't come out that clearly. I mean, the World Health Organization has issued a paper on ending childhood obesity, and part of that, one of the six strategies, is preconception care, because they recognize that if the mother is obese at the time, then that is more likely to lead to an obese child and then long-term health complications for that child, potentially metabolic syndrome, blood pressure problems, and obesity.
That's the population attributable fraction. I think that makes it really clear. And it also, you know, gives you some responsibility about what, as a clinician, what you're going to do about it.
Tell us specifically about how the PAPs changed over time for different conditions.
So, well, the outcomes we looked at, for example, birth by cesarean in that early section of 1990 to 1994 was at 8.4%, and it rose to 11%. So, you know, outside all the other reasons for those changes, that's just one example. Prematurity, 6.1% to 8%. Gestational diabetes has risen from 13% to 17%. So this is a proportion of, you know, that's fairly significant. And this is just related to weight, so it doesn't really take into account other impacts, you know, practices and impacts that might affect it. And stillbirth's another one. For the combined overweight and obese women in 1990 to 1994 was 5.3%, and in the period from 2010 to 14, 8.8% of stillbirth was related to being, for the mother being overweight and obese. Yes. There's a big push generally about stillbirth, so it's not just one area. The impacts are quite significant.
Are you able to say that you've accounted for other factors? Is there a causality, is what I'm asking, I guess. Can you assume causation from your results?
No. That's not what we're doing. In the analysis, the statisticians used a particular formula of the PATH to exclude as many as they could. It was quite a specific analysis. But, you know, you can never take that out. We did adjust for as much as we can. Yeah. But, you know, we adjusted for maternal age, smoking, socioeconomic status, ethnicity, that sort of thing. The year of birth has changed over time.
Yes.
But we couldn't, you know, adjust for everything.
There is an association that we can see between obesity and all these adverse outcomes, but we can't say it's necessarily causal. It's a very strong association. Really, there's growing realisation by researchers, by clinicians and nutritionists that in the area of obesity, that intervening during pregnancy may be too little too late. And certainly many of the large studies have shown that interventions, if started once pregnant, really don't have a huge impact on many of the adverse outcomes we've been talking about. So it's important that any intervention really needs, you know, we don't actually know what those interventions are because there's no study, but it's likely that, you know, interventions before pregnancy will be more beneficial to limiting the adverse effect of those outcomes. So that I think that's a very important part. A very important message from this study.
When you talk about prevention strategies, are you talking about lifelong, or can an obese woman who wants to get pregnant make a concerted effort and avoid these kind of adverse outcomes?
Well, I think that's where we have to start. We've got to start focusing on preconception health. Yeah. And getting all of, you know, it's just not something that we do particularly well in this country. But it's not to say that we can't do it, but just start to focus on that time of being healthy and ready for pregnancy. And also, you know, then it picks up again once a woman has a baby, and that sort of postpartum message and advice and service really has to be, you know, you need to lose that normal healthy pregnancy weight that you put on needs to come off, and you've got to let yourself have time and the right support to do that. People living in obesogenic environments, it's really, there's a whole lot of strategies that need to intersect to towards helping people do it, because, you know, it's not about making women feel bad. it's about understanding the whole situation, from how much obesity and overweight is affecting women, and then, you know, letting them know about it and helping them towards an outcome of, you know, being healthy.
Sorry, can I just correct something?
Sure. Kate?
So just in the studies that have been undertaken in pregnancy to intervene and to kind of try and limit adverse outcomes in women that are presenting in pregnancy who are overweight or obese, the studies have not shown a reduction in large for gestational age, although one study did show a reduction in macrosomia, that's birth weight more than 4 kilograms.
Yeah.
So there's been some, you know, there is some effect for studies that provide interventions in pregnancy, but they're limited, and there's scope for much better outcomes in pre-pregnancy interventions. So okay. One of the challenges we have, though, is that pregnancy planning is not often undertaken. And indeed, you know, my own studies have shown that only around half of women who present for antenatal clinic had actually intended to have that pregnancy at that time. And it's really about our mindset change in primary care and in the population, that we really need our bodies to be kind of in an optimal place, ideally, before we start pregnancy, because it will have implications for the health of our children. And I think that message is really important. And you know, trying to encourage those GPs who are, you know, very, very overworked, but maybe just finding one simple question that they could ask women of reproductive age when they come in: have you, you know, what are your plans for pregnancy? Do you have any plans for pregnancy in the next 12 months? And if they're not using contraception, and they don't want to get pregnant and they're not using contraception, potentially to direct the conversation there. And if they are thinking about having a pregnancy, then providing them with some information about how to optimise their health before conception. And that's not only about weight and diet, but maybe about, you know, about taking folic acids, making sure your immunisation is up to date, and looking at other lifestyle factors that may impact.
You know, as professionals, we need to do our job and upskill ourselves to be able to have healthy conversations and be better practitioners, and, you know, for our care to be respectful and person-centred. So sometimes we don't speak to women very nicely, perhaps, and that message comes across in that sort of fat-shaming way. I take a different approach to it, and I think it's actually that good wake-up call that we can change and we can be healthy, not just by what our BMI tells us, but we can, as Kirsten said, be vaccinated, have a good diet. We can change. We can be really sort of potent. You know, we can change who we are, yeah, to improve our health. And I think, you know, women just can't do that by themselves. We've got to help them. We've got to supply public health programs, support research. You know, it's not an easy thing. If it was easy to be thin, we'd all be thin. It's more about, as professionals, we approach it, and maybe our messages need to be better.
If you had a magic wand and you could do something right now to help women and inevitably babies to have good outcomes from pregnancies, what would you want to do?
I want to be in charge. I'd like to be in charge. I'd like to get rid of all the fast food outlets. I'd like us to all learn how to be, you know, nice, healthy cooks and value those parts of our life. But unfortunately, you know, the stuff that's really healthy for us mentally and physically is also competing against work and uni and a fast world. So we have to consider all those things. So a magic wand, I would magic myself over all those corporations, and I would also put myself in charge of decision making and where the dollars spent.
What about you, Kirsten?
So the public health strategies, you know, taxing actually does work. We know it works with tobacco, you know, it works with alcohol, and therefore we should apply taxes to these foods. Should not be the cheapest, you know, the you know, high calorie, high fat, but low nutritional value foods should not be the cheapest available. And You know, we should consider, as other countries have, implementing a sugar tax, although there's not huge amounts of evidence around that, but, you know, I think it'll be growing evidence in that field. And really training up GPs. I mean, Kate and I were lucky enough to do a course run from New Zealand, and it is really about the healthy conversations course, and it's skills really we didn't ourselves have. We had them to some extent, but certainly with this course we developed them, and it's really about engaging individual people about in open discovery questions and getting individuals really to come up with their own solutions rather than dictating, you know, you need to go on this diet, and you need, allowing, giving people the space to problem solve for themselves, presenting the information, this is the information, this is the consequences of, you know, your weight or your behaviour in this way, your smoking, etc.
Yes.
And allowing them to try and find space in their lives to make changes in their own way. So I think that we need public health changes, but we also need healthcare practitioner training around this kind of healthy conversations, which will make the conversations more digestible or more acceptable and, you know, less stigmatizing. Royal College of General Practitioners has preconception care as one of its preventative strategies.
Yep.
So there is very good guidelines available through the RACGP website about preconception care and what sort of areas need to be addressed in that. In terms of weight, particular weight management strategies, I'm sure that the GPs will have kind of access to people to refer to.
There's the Get Healthy program run by the Ministry of Health in New South Wales that has online support and supports GPs to send their patients, the funded support for their patients to go to dieticians and psychologists and all sorts of things.
We're saying, you know, if current trends persist, about 80% of all Australian adults and one third of Australian children will be overweight or obese by 2025.
Wow.
So we need to start really implementing some strategies, and also we need actually more research into what are the most effective preconception interventions that will arrest this trend.
Thank you both for your time. I think it's been terrific.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.